This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Global Legal Innovators, the podcast where you hear from people at the cutting edge of legal innovation across the world. On each episode, we'll have two or three people on from different regions talking about what's going on in legal innovation in their neck of the woods. Today, I'm thrilled to have with me Natalie Kubler, who is an Australian based in London. Many of those, I believe, Natalie. Natalie is the director of Altruistic Ventures, which is a new and exciting consultancy in the legal space that I'm looking forward to hearing more about. We also have with us Jason Dirks, who is the Knowledge Management Counsel at Littler Mendelsohn in Chicago. I met Jason last year, I believe, Jason, and have been very interested in the many exciting things that he's been doing. So thank you both so much for joining me. Nat, I might hand over to you just to give us a little bit more of an introduction to yourself, but also in the context of your role at Altruistic Ventures, and perhaps to tell us a bit more about what Altruistic Ventures does.
Thanks, Nikki. So my name's Natalie Kubler, and I have been working in the legal industry, both within law firms and with legal technology vendors, as well as consulting over the past 20 or so years. I think I'm going to stick with 20 or so years. It's probably not going to increase ever again. I think that's the sweet spot. So I've got a background that kind of started in working within a finance department within a law firm, and then moved into process and engineering and project management, which sort of shifted me into learning and working more in the risk management and compliance space, but also looking at solving some complex problems for law firms in how they can more efficiently control their output and aim for consistency in what they're doing. So AltB now works with firms and with vendors and legal startups to look at how they can solve those problems that they have in trying to provide better service to their clients.
Okay, interesting. Thanks, Nat. I am going to ask you more about that in a few minutes, but first, handing over to Jason. Jason, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and about your role at Littler Mendelsohn?
Sure. So I was actually a software developer before I went to law school and then got into legal, but I went straight out of law school into legal technology and legal innovation. And to make a long story short, that led me to my current firm, Littler Mendelsohn. I've been with Littler over 5 years now. And basically what I do, it's always a bit of a struggle to explain this, but I basically do product development for a law firm. And specifically what that means is I work with our joint venture, Compliance HR. Compliance HR is a separate company that Littler formed with legal technology company, NeotaLogic. But their goal, their mission is to provide products for HR professionals to help them navigate employment laws, essentially. And my role in that whole thing is to sort of head up the Littler side of things. So help the joint venture company understand the subject matter with particular products that they are interested in or that they want to develop, and then help them sort of understand and gather the resources on the Littler side to bring those resources, whether it be experts or whether it be content, to the table in the process of developing a particular product.
That's really cool. I'm curious, as a software developer turned lawyer, are you someone who believes that all lawyers should learn to code?
I think it's really helpful for lawyers to understand sort of the broader ideas like systems thinking and sort of thinking analytically, which I think lawyers kind of already do. And there's certain concepts, if you're building products, there's certain concepts around building products that are different from the way lawyers practice that I think would be important for them to learn if they want to get into that space. I don't think it's a super efficient use of their resources or anyone's resources, frankly, for lawyers to be coding themselves. It's a complex discipline. And if you're going to do something that lasts, you really need a professional software developer doing that work.
I was just going to say, it's kind of like saying I've cut myself and I'll go and get a medical, you know, I kind of learn to be a doctor to address that.
Yeah, exactly.
So it sounds like what you guys are saying is it's important for people for law firms in particular, to get people on board who actually have the specialty in which they're going to be acting, rather than to just throw lawyers into all of those roles.
Correct.
Yeah, I think
that's right.
or partner with organizations that, you know, that are trying to do that work. You know, the law firm's value is really in their subject matter expertise, right? So figure out how to bring that to the table with people that have expertise in other areas, and then work to, you know, fuse that expertise into something that's valuable.
Nat, I mean, is that something that Altruistic Ventures, and I'm going to call it Alt-V because I heard you call it that and it sounds cool. Is that something that you work on, is looking at law firms and how they can best leverage their expertise?
Absolutely. So I think that, you know, I completely agree with Jason and his assessment of what we're probably, what we've seen over the last sort of 5 years of with firms sort of suggesting that lawyers need to be able to be equipped to fill all of these gaps. And I think, you know, where we've definitely found a niche is by helping to facilitate some of the conversation and the teaching of techniques to people within firms to allow them to extract that subject matter expertise in such a way that I suppose it's a comfortable and enjoyable experience for everyone involved, but also so that we're getting the kind of critical information that's needed and following that sort of that line of analysis to make sure that we are building solutions that are effective for meeting problems rather than kind of overlooking the problem itself and putting all of our emphasis on solution.
And how do you do that? How do you focus in on the problem to make sure that you are solving the right problem effectively?
Through a number of different techniques and tools. So, I mean, we tend to take a lot of what we do from different methodology. You know, we've seen in the last couple of years that design thinking has been the new black. And I think that particularly after what we've gone through with COVID, we've started to see the danger of misinformation in a really quite serious way. And I think that it's interesting to see across the industry now, people are starting to speak more about some of the older methodologies and I'm seeing reference to process mapping and, you know, things akin to that, which is very interesting.
Yeah, we're getting back to, I guess, sort of the nuts and bolts of things. But at the same time, it sounds like what both of you have talked about is the need for firms to really partner with outside vendors or entities that are able to provide expertise outside of what the firm itself is able to offer. Jason, I was really interested to hear about this entity, this JV, Compliance HR. Can you give us an example of the type of product or some of the more interesting projects that you've worked on and how those projects have been improved or the success rate has been amplified by virtue of the fact that you're working with an outside entity rather than relying exclusively on law firm resources?
Sure, yeah. We have a wide variety of products at this point, and they range from the things that are more sort of complex and sort of tentpole products. Like we have an independent contractor app called Navigator IC, helps walk someone through the analysis of trying to determine whether somebody should be classified as an employee or independent contractor. That involves a lot of logic and sort of weighing of different factors and things. And it goes all the way down to something as simple as an application that just gives people the links to employment posters that are required in their state. Super simple. I frankly was really doubtful about the value of the app when we started developing it, and just because it was so simple. And it's actually one of the most popular apps in the entire suite. And I think it just, that speaks to the importance of not having an ego about a lot of this stuff and really listening to clients and trying to figure out different ways to facilitate client feedback, because our understanding of what our clients needs are constantly changing.
I mean, first of all, I think it's really key what you said about sometimes what seems so simple that it might not be useful is actually often what ends up being the most useful. But how do you keep a pulse on how the client's needs are changing?
Well, I think that's, this kind of dovetails into your other question, which is one of the benefits of having this separate entity that's sort of independent from the law firm is that they can focus on being a company, doing what they need to do to be a successful company just with what they have at their disposal. And a big part of that is them focusing on their clients. So they've decided to be very high touch, very sort of customer service focused. And a byproduct of that is they have a lot of interactions with their clients. And from that, they get a lot of feedback about what the clients need, what they're using regularly. And then, equally as useful, some of the things that we came out with that people aren't using as frequently, that we sort of, when we have similar ideas or similar opportunities come down the line, that we try to think about those things differently than the way we've done them.
How many apps are in this suite that you mentioned?
They have a couple different suites now, and then we've got one that we've started putting together for COVID, and we're working on one for returning to work. But there's probably somewhere between 15 and 20 maybe that range between super simple or just sort of delivering content to the more complex sort of logic-based or analysis-based apps.
And then these are apps that obviously actually are revenue generators rather than just pure value add. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, they're separate. So they do, they definitely benefit from being associated with Littler. They work with Littler to try to get our attorneys to refer clients to them when it's appropriate. They're completely separate. They sign contracts with their own clients that are separate. They have subscription agreements with their clients. That are usually based off of size and usage and things like that. And they've packaged the apps into different suites based on how they're used in this and how clients have sort of gravitated to certain sets of apps.
Matt, is it something that you're seeing in the ecosystem developing different types of models and actually working towards productization?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, if you look at the recent history, there's been this pendulum effect with this element as well, where 10 years ago, law firms were saying, oh, we shouldn't be productizing, we're not software houses. And we saw this sort of swing back to trying to find off-the-shelf solutions, which probably created this spur of all these legal tech startups that we're seeing now. And it's now sort of penduling back to firms tending to look for an in-house solution to this. And I think we're seeing it through the startup of various incubators for different firms across the globe, and their partnerships with tech startups or their blending of that sort of incubator approach with alternate legal services, and a combination of those elements with different client vendor peer firm collaborations as well, where we've got panel situations. So I think that there's a whole raft of activity going on in that space. It's just very interesting though that firms have felt the need to set up a dedicated focus on that, which is separate to the firm. And from a psychological standpoint, I'm sure that there's pros and cons to having done that, but I wonder if moving forward it does to some extent stunt our ability to embed that culture and appetite for change and service ethos and imagination and creativity within the law practice itself.
I hadn't thought of that, but it's a really good point. I mean, if you hive off, say, your incubation or your productization function from the rest of the firm, then are you actually genuinely changing the culture of the firm? Or are you just creating another arm of it? Nat, I'm really curious about the types of projects. I know AltV is very new. I think you said just before we started that it opened in April this year. So this may be a difficult question to answer, but what are some of the more interesting projects that you're working on or that you've seen?
Yeah, look, I think I'm probably not in a position to talk too specifically about this, but I'll speak a little bit generally about some of the projects we've seen in the legal space. I think that there's a whole raft of work being done with robotic solutions that we're seeing across the industry, and there's a lot of legal tech startups that are operating in the space of e-discovery and leveraging machine learning and natural language processing technologies to offer, I suppose, different solutions in that space. I think our observation is that they've been quite siloed, and there's a lot of solutions that a solution for a very specific business problem, which is great, but it just means we're ending up with a whole raft of different technologies in the market, which I think is probably going to be difficult for firms to manage moving forward. I think that some of the more interesting projects that we're seeing are the simple ones, like what Jason has alluded to. And there's, I think with innovation, there's often a lot of theatre that goes on around what different firms are doing in that space, and a lot of ambiguity, I think, around what's out there. And some of the most elegant solutions that we've seen have been things like a tool that is able to manage the workload distribution across a firm, which at a time like this, when we've got certain practices that are maybe struggling and certain practices that are doing much better, and we've introduced all of these compliance activities to ensure that people aren't operating outside of their specialization, we're now sort of having to find a way to self-level that. And, you know, we've seen the use of resourcing tools that are able to sort of look at and assess capacity, capability, and work coming in the door and start to do the thinking for us in terms of where do we need to be putting our people and how can we most effectively use the skills that we have available to us.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I mean, I think that kind of workload distribution, capacity management tool, I've heard many law firms talk about it, especially in light of the COVID-19 crisis. It seems to be a real need that has arisen in respect of that crisis, which is quite interesting. I'm curious, Jason in Chicago, Nat in London, but you probably work across a number of regions. One of the things this podcast deals with is the way that innovation is unfolding differently across different parts of the world. Jason, what have you seen in Chicago and the States? What do you think is moving forwards? Some of what Nat was talking about, and you going back to the simple, going back to the nuts and bolts, that kind of notion of almost the bring back boring. Is that what we're seeing in the US, or what's happening here? What are you seeing?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hit it to a degree. You know, you work across a lot of different regions. I guess I am sort of plugged into the Chicago area a bit because I went to law school here, and I'd like to go back and volunteer with the law school. And so I'm seeing some interesting things. Chicago Kent, my former law school, has always had some interesting programs, and they've been evolving those to offer much richer programs than I had when I was in law school, just to expose law students to some of this stuff that you really had to seek out when I was in school. And now they have, you know, classes or full tracks on it. And then more recently, Western picked up Dan Linna from Michigan State, and they're starting to build out a program in collaboration with their computer science program. that is offering some, I think, really interesting courses. And it does a lot of that collaboration that we were talking about, where it brings law students to the table with CS students and has them work collaboratively on products, as opposed to just having, you know, law students try to figure out the technology themselves. I think there's firms here too that are doing some really interesting things. There's several firms that have offices here that have been doing legal innovation for a while. And there's new entrants into the market. One of the most interesting ones, I think, is Chapman and Cutler. For a long time, they were considered a very conservative firm. And within the last 5 years or so, they've built up a really interesting innovation program. I think a year or two ago, they ended up selling something they built to NetDocs. Like a deal room product, I think. My friend and former colleague, Michael Nagroski, is sort of part of that program. And so I think that's a really interesting story for anyone that wants to kind of dig in and learn about a firm that went from sort of not doing a lot in the legal innovation space to really start spinning up a program and hitting the ground running.
That's really interesting. And I like what you said as well about the universities, because I think that certainly in the States, that is where we're seeing a lot of work happening to cross the verticals in legal and collaborate and do things a little bit differently around there. Nat, what are you seeing in the UK, for example? What are some of the newer initiatives there?
Probably in a very similar vein. There's a lot coming out of the universities, both here and in Australia, in terms of different styles of program to help new lawyers, I suppose, learn skills that were traditionally not part of the curriculum. And so there's a lot going on in that space. And there's a lot of, I suppose, independent student groups that exist that are operating in that space and driving the hackathon styled approach to distributing learning different techniques for problem solving really across the community. So I think that there's really still a lot happening in that space.
That's great. So we're really, I mean, universities really are, I guess you could say, one of the hotbeds for legal innovation at the moment in several regions across the world, which is fascinating. We are almost at time, but I want to ask you both a very quick question, which is, what is a cool new tool that you're aware of that you think that people should know about? Nat, you first.
I think something that I've seen interesting recently is a tool called Rebelleth, which is looking at how networks and narratives exist across different entities. So can be used from a PR and brand perspective to understand networks that exist for a particular brand, but equally can be used for due diligence on clients and understanding the connections that they have.
Very cool. What about you, Jason?
The things that we're looking at are actually more, you know, they're less legal tech tools, and it's more figuring out what tools exist in the marketplace that can sort of help with this packaging and productization that we're trying to drive. You know, so we're looking at like content management systems and things like that, because the, you know, sort of getting back to, you know, something I said earlier is our firm's real sort of value point is our expertise, which is often delivered through content. And so a way to really supercharge that is to figure out a way to better manage our content and be more efficient delivering that. Particularly we saw with, you know, with COVID, normally the justification for packaging is price, but with COVID, people were needing help so quickly. Being able to manage content and get it out quickly, scale has become another powerful justification for, you know, packaging and productizing knowledge.
Yeah, that's such a fair point. We really have seen changes in the wake of that crisis, that's for sure. Well, thank you both so much for joining me for this fascinating conversation. And thank you to all of our listeners for joining our Global Legal Innovators podcast again. Tune in next time and have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.